Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And welcome back. We are delighted to say hello to Greg McElroy joining us here. He'll be part of course, ESPN's coverage over the weekend with some of the biggest games of the day. Greg, thank you for being here. I believe you're doing LSU and Florida State. I think that's right. If it's not, you can correct me, as I'm sure your cohort on Sunday night will correct you. Let's start there. We still haven't heard a lot official. About the quarterback situation there, but most people seem to think it's going to be the transfer from Arizona State. What are you hearing about LSU's camp?
Well, Paul, it's funny. I'm hearing the same things you're hearing, but that's almost a complete 180 from what I heard about 2 weeks ago after the first scrimmage, where I had heard that Garrett Nussmeier had kind of ascended to the top of the depth chart. And that Jaden Daniels was coming on, but not at this point, not to the point where he could overtake Garrett Nussmeier. Now, that was through first scrimmage of fall camp. Now, here we are after their second scrimmage, and then even a couple of practices in addition to their second scrimmage. And it sounds as though it's kind of a coin flip, but they're leaning just ever so slightly in favor of Jaden Daniels. So it's purely speculative at this point. I think they're willingness to divulge any secrets would work against them, given the fact that Nussmeier and Daniels are very different players and require almost a completely different game plan to try to neutralize either one. So I don't blame Brian Kelly for being coy, but I also wouldn't be surprised at all, Paul, if both guys see action on Sunday night when they tee it up.
I'm sure you were watching, as we all were, because the games were pretty sparse because of lightning on Saturday afternoon and evening, Florida State, and I think they were playing Duquesne, although I'm not 100% sure. Did we gain anything from that game in terms of trying to figure out what Florida State is going to look like Sunday night?
Well, we gained a couple things, Paul. The receiver position had been a bit of an issue for them for a while relative to Florida State's own expectations, right? Like, we're used to seeing Peter Warwick and, you know, great wide receiver play for the Seminoles for the last 20, 25, 30 years. They have not been that the last couple years, so I was impressed with how they've grown at that position. I think they can go three deep at running back, but that's not a huge surprise either. They've been excellent at that spot for a while. A lot of people praising the offensive line because they ran for over 400 yards, but if you really watch the game, the offensive line was very leaky and gave up a lot of penetration. And like what you said, that was against Duquesne. Wasn't able to take a whole lot from their defense. They were very vanilla, and they were obviously working against a completely overmatched FCS opponent. So I think it's one of those where you take it with a grain of salt. You don't jump to too many conclusions because it's a completely different animal on Sunday when they tee it up against the Tigers.
In a game like the one against LSU, what does playing the previous week do for a program versus LSU, which is coming in cold, so to speak?
I actually think it's pretty valuable, Paul. There's two ways of thinking about this, and I experienced both in my time as a starting quarterback. If you start with a capable opponent week one, and that would be from LSU's perspective, meaning that they're playing against a team that can literally beat them, the level of urgency that you had in camp was just a little bit more significant than if you opened up, say, against a Duquesne, where you can kind of say, well, you know, we're going to get through week one. Let's just survive. Let's not have any injuries, and we'll just live to play week two, and then we'll throw the kitchen sink at them. So I experienced both. My junior year, we played Virginia Tech week one. My senior year, we played San Jose State week one. And I remember our camp our junior year was just a lot more crisp than it was my senior year, not because we didn't try as hard, just you knew that you had to have everything buttoned up for that capable first week opponent. And as a result, I think it carried over into the season a little bit as well. Now week two, my senior year, we played Penn State, and we knew we kind of had to have our wits about you there, but the urgency in camp was a little different. So I think it does benefit you to knock off some of the rust, but I personally think that you're more benefited by playing against your own team in an additional scrimmage than playing against a team that you're not really going to gain a whole lot from, and if anything, you might get false confidence against.
Talking to Greg McElroy, Greg, we talked about this earlier when I was with you and Cole, but I'm just so intrigued by the Utah-Florida game because you can come up with a million different ways of looking at it, especially with Florida having Kentucky the following week. As you dig in on this game and try to sort it out, what are you hearing, especially from Florida's camp?
Well, hope springs eternal. I mean, I've never seen – you tell me this, Paul. You know this longer than I have. I'll ask you a question in order before I answer yours. Have you ever seen a more polarizing situation than what Billy Napier's in right now? Like, I feel like half the people love him and like, this is our guy, he's going to get us back. And then half the people are like, he can't recruit, I can't stand him. Like, I've never seen a guy that hasn't coached a game be more polarizing, having done nothing really up to this point to be polarizing, than what Billy Napier is currently dealing with. Just answer that for me first before I answer your question.
Yeah, I mean, the only point of reference I could go, and it would predate you at Alabama, was when Alabama had a coach, and I think it was Bill Curry, where his record was good, but fans hated his guts. Not all of them, but a certain number of them. And you know what I'm talking about, because Alabama was so divided about him. Even after that, the coaches who weren't that good, most fans supported. But, no, it's a unique situation. And I think he with his beginning, and I'll let you pick up on this, so much depends on these first 2 weeks.
Right. Well, like I said, like it's very, very polarizing. Some guys are like, this is our guy. We're going to support him no matter what. The others are like, he needs to be fired before he coaches his first game because he doesn't know how to recruit and he's never going to close the gap. I can tell you this. If the result goes in favor of the Gators, I can promise you that's going to go from one polar extreme to the very, very much the other. They will allow him to not just run for mayor, but they might allow him to run for governor in the state of Florida this upcoming election circuit. So I look at right now what Florida has, and I actually think, Paul, them along with LSU are and Ole Miss too, to a certain extent, they're probably the biggest question marks in the entire SEC because they all have talent, but all the talent that they have on their roster hasn't always played great, or it hasn't played great at that place, or that they've just kind of had a little bit of a poisonous situation, so it's tough to get a bit of a gauge on them. For instance, like Jackson Dart at Ole Miss, like I think he's got a chance to be really good, but he was very hit or miss last year at SC in what was a bit of a polarizing situation, a bit of a poisonous situation. So I think same with a lot of the guys on Florida's roster last year. The defense was totally up and down. The offense was totally up and down. Dan Mullen gets fired. I mean, it's Todd Grantham's removed. It's like last year is a difficult year to really gauge what Florida's roster looks like. Now, I think they have some talented weapons. I think they have some talented pieces. And I wouldn't at all be surprised if they go out and they hang with a team that I think will make the playoff this year. That's right. I think Utah is going to make the playoff. I believe that strongly in what they bring back. And I believe that strongly in the culture that's been built, and I love their quarterback, and I think this is the best quarterback they've had at Utah in quite a while. No disrespect to Tyler Huntley. I just think what you have right now with Cameron Rising is on another level than what they have. And right now, to get into the playoff, unless you have a super elite roster, you better have an elite quarterback. I think Rising has a chance to be just that if he stays healthy. So I think this is an extremely good quality, high quality, top 10 team that's been years and years in the years and creating the foundation to go and play against the best in the most hostile environments. And yet, I actually think this weekend is their most likely game to lose this year against a rebuilding Florida team because of the talent on the roster. And I think that Billy Napier is going to implement a style in which no stone's left unturned and every detail is accounted for in the days and the hours leading up to kickoff. So I think in order to beat Florida at their place, you better throw your A game at them. And if Utah doesn't, they will leave the swamp empty-handed.
And finally, the game, they have 2 weeks to get ready for Penn State. But I know you talked to Brian Harsin earlier. I want to hear your thoughts on the quarterback situation before we figure out the rest, and how TJ Finley, you know, wins the job, and what does that say and what does that mean?
Well, I want to first start by saying that last year I was a little bit disappointed in TJ Finley, and now take that with a slight grain of salt. He was thrust into the lineup. He actually played well against Georgia State early in the season when he basically came off the bench and saved the day. Then we saw him the next week against LSU, and he played poorly in what was 3 or 4 plays that he was out there on the field against his former team. I just thought we'd get a significant – I think he has a ton of talent. I thought from where he was during the COVID year when he was forced into the lineup to where he was last year, I hadn't seen the growth that I'd anticipated a guy with that – skill set making. If anything, I thought he looked slow to process at times. I thought he was a little bit stationary in the pocket. I didn't think he used his size, nor do I think he used his strength in the pocket the way a guy that's 6'6", 250 should. When I see a guy that's that big in the pocket, I feel like he should play like Ben Roethlisberger. And that's just unfair to put those level of expectations on a young man that was only in college for 2 years. Now, fast forward to 2022. He's had an entire spring to work within the offense. He's had an entire spring to create chemistry with the wide receivers. And yes, Zach Calzada came back this summer after the surgery. And we know that Robbie Ashford's been put in the mix as a situational player. But nobody could close the gap with TJ Finley. The gap had just been created. So I think we all just need to be very careful in making our judgments on TJ Finley based on what he was last year. He was disappointing at times. There's no denying that. But he was also handed a little bit of an unfair situation. It was also a very difficult situation to step into. So I think he's going to be quite a bit better this year. I also think Auburn's going to stay true to who they are, and that's leaning on the run game, leaning on off tackle, leaning on the perimeter run game, and allowing those running backs that are super dynamic to work a lot in space. If he can make a throw or two or three a game down the field and connect with one of their wide receivers in one-on-one coverage to create big plays, this offense has a chance to balance out. And if it balances out, they can be extremely dangerous. So I'm cautiously optimistic that TJ Finley has taken the next step. But if we go based on the 2021 tape, that step's going to need to be significant for Auburn to reach its potential this year.
Great stuff. I'm Greg McElroy joining us getting ready for week one. We'll take a break. More to come right after this. More of your phone calls and plenty more guests as we begin to work our way through this Monday afternoon program.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we're back. Heard a little bit from Brian Kelly a minute ago about Sunday night's game. We heard also from McElroy. Let's now hear from Brody Miller from The Athletic, who covers the team so well. Brody, thanks for hopping on board. It's always good to hear from you. So let's get right back to that question about the quarterback. I understand why you don't want to give it away, but what is the betting line where you are on who will be taking the snaps on Sunday night? Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me as always, Paul. As of now, the tough thing is, I think right now is most likely that Jaden Daniels is probably the first guy out there on Sunday. One, experience. Two, I think the key thing when they talk about him is how good he is at, you know, running the offense, managing the offense, those kind of things. And a lot of history shows Brian Kelly puts a lot of value on that. Plus his dual threat ability against a pretty good Florida State front seven. But the real answer, I think, you know, that makes it tricky to really cover is that I think there's a lot of indications and a lot of things I'm hearing that both quarterbacks will play. I mean, one, you look at the way he's talked about, it's going to be 1A, 1B, you know, how the, you know, all these things about how the second guy needs to be ready at all times, but just a lot of talk around the program has been that both guys will play. And first off, if that's true, it's going to be fascinating to see, is he doing kind of like a half and half, you know, first half, second half thing, like the Malik Zaire, Deshaun Kizer situation that didn't go so well. Would he play, you know, drive to drive? I don't know. Or maybe one guy does just play the game, but they have a really short leash. But I would be pretty surprised if both quarterbacks don't play quite a bit this year. But as of now, I would put my money on Jaden Daniels getting the first round.
There's so many different opinions, as we heard from Kelly, on what playing a team that's already had a game. Although it's hard to imagine. I tried to watch that game the other night, but I mean, it was brutal trying to figure out what was happening there. I guess you sat there with and listened to Brian Kelly with a straight face trying to praise Duquesne's wins last year, but when you get away from this for a couple of months, you forget how ridiculous some of these press conferences are, don't you, Brody, with the team, with the coach trying to sell you on the other team and who they played?
Yes, it is one of the more entertaining elements of the job, yes, and talking about, you know, how Florida State took them to overtime last year and how, but people forget that was a very bad look for this Notre Dame team and all that. But yeah, I'll admit I tried to, you know, as a diligent beat reporter, tried to look at that Florida State game for a little bit, and then, like you, I very quickly was like, hey, I don't think I'm learning anything actually productive here. So I did not, but yeah, it's definitely a first week pressers are truly a gift in their own way. If opening press conferences are a gift because you hear everyone talk about how they want to be multiple, first week press conferences are a lot of nonsense.
And now that we're in the first week game, we've come full circle on Brian Kelly. Everything that you've written about ad nauseum, everything that's been talked about. How do you think he has handled the moment from the arrival to getting ready to walk in that dome on Sunday night?
Yeah. I've said this to you before, is I have plenty of questions about how he'll do, yeah, like starting September 4th from on out. But I genuinely do give him a lot of credit for how he's done everything, to your point, since December. You know, the way he's kind of changed the culture in there, changed the accountability, you know, some guys getting pushed out that were red flags, some guys that were red flags and have, quite frankly, kind of been course corrected and now like team leaders and really diligent players. I mean, you look at the example of, not that Kayshon Boutte was by any means a problem kid, but, you know, he had to call Kayshon Boutte out, and, you know, there were issues that first few months. He mishandled his rehab, wasn't showing up. And he kind of, you know, used a few moves to get him back on track. And the last 4 months, I mean, you won't hear a bad word about him. So, and you'll hear only great things about him. So I think he's changed a lot in that building in terms of how things are run and just the standards, quite frankly. I think he's done a good job in terms of stocking the roster through the portal in a way that is both helping the team right now, but also not just patching holes and helping the team 3 years from now. I think he's done a good job of that. I think the big questions will be, how does he handle this quarterback situation? What does this offense actually look like? Those kind of things that, unfortunately, we just don't have the answers to yet. But, yeah, over all these 9 months, I think he's kind of done a masterclass in just kind of getting this program a little more on track.
You mentioned the issues with Kayshon. You wrote about that today in The Athletic. What did you learn in digging deep on that subject?
Yeah, it's truly been a fascinating 9-10 months for Kayshon because, you know, as of October last year, I think it's safe to say he was kind of one of the, I don't know, two or three front runners for the Biletnikoff that was just blowing up, quite frankly, makes that incredible catch, and all of a sudden he breaks his ankle. A week later, the staff that recruited him is entirely gone, and new coach comes in that is completely new to him. As much as we have to tiptoe around it, quite frankly, yeah, he was flirting with and talking to other schools around the SEC. Those rumors never stop. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he is in these NIL meetings where a local attorney basically slash booster is keeping him on campus with a pretty public deal. Then, you know, he mishandled, and as I mentioned before, he pretty much has admitted this since, that he mishandled his rehab. I mean, he was kind of in a tough place dealing with that broken ankle, first real injury of his life, and he didn't really do his rehab correctly, and that led to his ankle not, you know, healing properly. So he had to get a second surgery. He wasn't really around the program, and Brian Kelly basically wasn't even able to have enough FaceTime with him to really connect with him. So the only way he decided to do that was calling him out publicly in a press conference and kind of joking about how he only knew his last name, and I know we talked when that happened, and basically saying he's disconnected right now. And they had individual meetings after that as well, and everything since then, from what I've gathered, that really woke him up. You know, he's in great shape right now. He's, you know, working really hard. He's turning into a bit more of a leader, and I think the evidence that he had won Brian Kelly over was him giving that number 7. And as much as we all sometimes might roll our eyes at the relevance of certain numbers and things like that, Brian Kelly is not a guy who would give him that number if he didn't think he earned it. He doesn't really, he's pretty stubborn. So him giving that, and Kelly's spoken about it since, was proof that he has earned that trust. And, you know, all indications are Kayshon Boutte is back for another big year this year.
I was just thinking, Brody, as you were saying all that, it was a year ago as LSU was about to head west for what can only be described as a complete and total debacle against UCLA. And just to think about, from Ed O, 1 year removed from a national championship, still a lot unknown a year ago heading into that game versus today. How would you describe these last 52 weeks?
Man, yeah. In a lot of ways, there's some similarities because in just a roster level, you're like, hey, it's still a really talented team with flaws. But, yeah, I think, you know, just so much has changed in this state and this school that, you know, Ed Orgeron was the favorite son. And at that time, going into UCLA, as much as we knew there was pressure, it was still like he's not going to get – it wasn't quite, I think he's going to be fired this year. So to think how much has changed, to think how much it is a completely different building now, and to think how, you know, it went from the most colorful personality probably in all of college coaching to, I don't know, one of the drier, you know, one of the more kind of stable – it's wild to think how much has changed. And now you enter this game and – it's an eerily kind of similar opening week matchup in the sense that, one, it's another team that had a bad record last year, very much like UCLA did the year before, but we're clearly kind of turning a corner under a new coach. They're fighting harder, they look a little better, and they're returning, like UCLA last year, a ton of production. I believe they both were top 10 in ESPN's returning production metric, Florida State is this year. So and they both had week zero games to warm up to it. So it's a really interesting thing of very much like that.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Brian Kelly has this game ready. Yeah, they should win this game by one or two scores. They are, in theory, better, but very much like that UCLA game, you know, if they are not ready, if those depth issues are still as bad as they could be, absolutely Florida State could go into the Dome and win this game. So it's really similar in the sense that this game will very quickly tell us what this team might even, what the ceiling and floor of these teams are.
Brody, finally, those watching TV over the weekend couldn't help but see Dan Mullen. He was front and center on ESPN's coverage of the lightning delays for pretty much every game that was going on. I know Orgeron is speaking a little bit. I happened to be somewhere in a couple weeks, and I saw his name as one of the speakers. But beyond random speaking and beach photos on Instagram, what is Ed Orgeron doing this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for a while he was looking very, he was trying to find a television job. And, you know, that did, I think most opportunities they pursued did not really work out. So I think for the most part right now, one, I think he's enjoying his life. I think he's kind of enjoying living in Florida and, you know, going out having fun. But two, I think he's also kind of been in one of those, you know, those kind of coaching tours you see when coaches take a year off. You know, one of his sons is working on Mario Cristobal's Miami staff. I've often seen him, you know, photographed at Miami. Another son is at UL with the Raging Cajuns. I know he swung by there, swung by Notre Dame in the spring. I think he's kind of doing one of those, you know, year of, you know, learning kind of things, because big picture, he said often he wants to get back into coaching in some capacity. So I don't know what that looks like. But yeah, I think this year is going to be a lot of kind of learning, but also kind of enjoying his life. You know, he's got a lot of money and, you know, he's enjoying.
Is there any reason to believe that he can't get a job? I mean, I bring that up because there's still a lot of unfinished litigation down there. I don't know where it is. I've kind of lost track. Can he get a head coaching job?
Now, he's been removed from the lawsuit that he was linked to. You know, that was kind of a messy situation that he was kind of thrown onto without, you know, a ton of ground for that, and then it was quickly removed. So as far as I know, in terms of litigation, he should be clear. But to your question, I still don't know if, yeah, there's some unease from, you know, administrations of just lingering things from that era, lingering things with the handling of the Geis situation and a few others. I don't know if more things would come up if they looked into that. But at the same time, he always did say he wanted to at least take this year off. But that it'll be a really interesting storyline next year for sure.
Yeah, and again, you're down there, we're not, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, but from some people, it just doesn't seem like he left there with a lot of warm feelings. Not him toward them, but them toward him.
Yeah, you know, in terms of, I think around here he will always be beloved, and I think he will be, in some ways, because it ended so swiftly, it kind of helps his long-term legacy there, you know, just because he now gets to, you know, there wasn't this prolonged, like, when are you getting rid of this guy? It was, he won the title, he's out, boom. And I think he can still be beloved, but it's going to take a little bit because it was so messy. You know, one favor Scott Woodward definitely did for him was letting him coach that final season, letting him go out on his own terms a little, letting it be amicable, you know, where they were still around each other and talking to each other. So I do think we'll still be, but yeah, I mean, it's not a secret that it was kind of a messy ending, and there was a lot of drama and things like that where he did frustrate a lot of people by the way he left. So I know that's kind of a couched answer, but it's somewhere in the middle where I do think his legacy will still be kind of a beloved Louisiana figure, but a very messy one.
Yeah, it might take a new administration for him to become beloved inside those walls again. Brody, always good to
inside
have you
the
on.
Walls, yeah.
Exactly. No, he'll never have a problem buying a drink or having a drink bought for him in that state. I think that's understood.
Exactly.
Be well. Come back soon.
Thanks as always, Paul. Take care.
Great stuff from Brody Miller. Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing about, you know, some coaches leave a school and you wonder, will they be invited back for the reunion? Ed Orgeron, 5, 10, 15, 20-year reunion of the national championship team. He'll be there. It's just a matter of whether they'll let him in the building before he goes into the stadium. We'll take a break. More to come right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back. Busy 30 minutes there with Greg and Brody. Let's get some more phone calls here and check in with Doug in Honolulu. Hello, Doug.
Aloha, Paul. Aloha.
How are you?
I'm telling you, it's been fantastic. The people out here are great. And how many times do I get to relax during the second half of a Vanderbilt football game? It's not often, but boy, I tell you, it was such a joy coming out here. And I've got a Dole pineapple tour coming up at 11, which whatever time it is over there, I don't know what time it is over there. And then I'm going to go see Pearl Harbor. I'm telling you, Vanderbilt is back under Coach Lee. We're putting the SEC East on notice that we're no longer a cakewalk. We carried the flag for the SEC this week. 63 points as a Vanderbilt fan. You couldn't ask for more.
Hey, Doug, you're right. And, you know, easy game this week. And then I will tell you, the Wake Forest situation is intriguing. They're without their starting quarterback who led them last year to the ACC championship game. And that's a winnable game for Vandy. And the idea that Vanderbilt could start off that fast will definitely have Nashville on its ear. And I think we're going to be up there in a couple weeks. So that will be even equally exciting. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. John is in Kentucky. How are you, John?
Good. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you.
First time caller for the show. Big Kentucky fan. Just one question for you. How do you feel about Ramon Jefferson and Cavassier Smoke being able to fill in for Chris Rodriguez in a big SEC game like Florida?
I think it's going to be a real challenge. And listen, we don't know very much. It was somebody it was Pat Forty took a shot at Coach Stoops a minute ago, saying that he was very talkative about blasting John Calipari, but he didn't have much to say today. But I'm not really sure what you can say about this situation. Back to your question, we asked McElroy that question. He said possible, but I think the Florida-Kentucky game has changed dramatically today now that we know a little bit more about this situation. Let's check in with Kevin, who is in Atlanta. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Very well. Thank you.
Okay, Paul, I'm going to jump to leagues. I'm going to the Big Ten. Can I ask you, of course, what is up with Scott Frost? I mean, because I watched the game, and does he even care anymore? I mean, I'm looking at this game like it's like a rerun. Press the button, it's the same thing every week. And then he has a look on his face like he don't even care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious he shouldn't be there any longer. And I think the sooner he is let go, the better chance they have of reconvening. Now, I've seen situations where you lose the first game and you can recover from it, but it just seems like everything he does is wrong. And that's a game they should have won. I mean, everyone knows that. They're up by 11. I don't know how you come up with something that's stupid. I mean, I really don't. But he is going to be out at the end of the season. Quite frankly, I don't know what think it matters a whole lot. What if he wins 8 or 9 games this year? He still can't. He has still lost the fan base. And it's hard to lose the Nebraska fan base. I mean, they are blindly loyal. I mean, they've supported a lot of very average coaches in the past. Tyler is up next in Georgia. Hello, Tyler.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. It's my second time calling in.
Thank you.
First thing, I want to give a shout-out to my father-in-law. We had his celebration of life this past week, and he was a longtime listener of yours. I didn't always agree, but he respected your opinion. Big Alabama fan as well.
Well, Tyler, thank you very much. What was his name, just so we can all remember him together?
His name is Mike Livingston of Locust Grove, Georgia.
Well, we will think about you, Mike, and for those who knew you well, and for those who didn't, but are now aware of what you have done in your life and stood for, we appreciate it, and we will certainly forever think about you here on the program.
Well, thank you, Paul. I know his family will definitely appreciate that as I do as well. He was a great man, a big Bama fan, remembered the Bear days and all the good times and the bad. So I was lucky to have known him. I guess two questions for you here. So the first question, what is kind of your go-to game this weekend that you're looking forward to the most? And then my second question is the Ohio State-Notre Dame game. Now, I keep hearing so much about this Ohio State defense, but, you know, nobody's really talking about Foskey over there on Notre Dame's defense. And I'm a big Notre Dame fan. So what are the keys to the game that you see Notre Dame needs to do to overcome that Ohio State Buckeye defense?
Tyler, I think that really the most important thing is just dealing with the environment. It's going to be a frenzied atmosphere at the Horseshoe, and I worry a little bit about a new staff, and I realize Marcus Freeman coached one game, not very well, I might add, in the bowl game, and to me, this is just a bad setup, and I fully expect Ohio State to roll in this game, And quite frankly, the other game I'm thinking about is Florida hosting Utah. Utah's a projected Final Four team, but they're very vulnerable in that setting. And Florida, which many people thought could start the season 0-2. What if they start the season 2-0? What if they pull this game out and then deal with a depleted Kentucky team missing some of its best players? It's a real opportunity. Up against a break, we have a lot more to do. We hope you'll stick around. Some more guests will be dropping by, and we are back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and Kiki is up next in Florida. Hello, Kiki.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. Hope you are.
Oh, I am too. I've called a couple times before, and I have a scenario for you.
Okay.
And I would like to hear your comments on it. Okay, you are in charge of hiring a new sportscaster or sidekick to your show, and you have to hire one of these three candidates, Ed O, Urban Meyer, or Dan Mullins. Who would it be? How would you rank them, and why? And I'll hang up and let you answer.
Thank you, Kiki.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you very much. Well, if I had to hire either Mullen, Urban, or Ed Ogeron. How long do I have to answer this? Let me think about that. I think the answer is I would probably swallow some cyanide. I would not work with any of the three. I mean, I'm sorry. I could rank them in order of which ones I would prefer to work with, and Mullen would be my first choice. Well, there's no between the next two. I'm going to stick to my original answer. I'm checking out. Sayonara. Bye-bye. Reginald is up next. Hey, Reginald. Ronald is up next, too. Hey, Ronald.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right, man. I try to get off of work and catch you every day, man.
Thank you.
Hey, but Paul, let me, it's more of a question than a statement. Let me ask you this. Everybody got tunnel vision about the great defense that Georgia had.
Okay.
But you have to also give a lot of the explosive plays to that kept Georgia ahead. I really believe everybody's focused on Kirby, but I think this is Todd Martin and Bennett coming out part of this year.
That's an interesting question. You feel pretty strongly about that.
Yeah, like everybody's like being on Kirby. Everywhere Kirby has been, he's had a very good defense. I think this is Todd Martin's resume. And I'm willing to go out there on a limb, Paul. It's going to be some NFL teams watching him this year.
I think you're right. I have no doubt Kirby Smart is capable of doing similar things in the NFL. Now, sometimes that depends on circumstances. But, Ronald, I don't see Kirby Smart really wanting to go to the NFL. Maybe down the road, but right now – nobody has it going better than he does. And he can see into the future. And that's why winning that game was so important. Had he lost that game against Alabama, then the narrative would be he can't beat Alabama. Maybe at some point he moves on. But right now he's got the world on a string. And you know, he really has one competitor looking deep into the future, and that's Jimbo Fisher. You know, we don't know about Billy Napier yet. We think we know, but we're not 100% sure about other coaches in the SEC, whether it's Tennessee or South Carolina. But he's already dealt with the Saban factor. Doesn't mean Saban is gone, but he beat Saban for a national championship. Only one other person can make that claim. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's check out John David in Georgia. Hello, John David.
Hey, Paul. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say I'm a little upset that people in Vegas are only giving the Dogs 17.5 points. I mean, have you ever seen a duck fly into the state of Georgia and make it out?
That's a lot of points, but what do you think?
Paul, I mean, I'll be honest. We're not rebuilding. We're reloading. This defense line's going to shock some people this year.
How?
We got a lot of guys that have been in the system for 3 years, and they're hungry. They're former five-stars, former four-stars. It's their time to eat.
Now, I agree with you on that, but and I mean, I think when you think about the amount of playing time, I mean, everybody on that defense has played a lot because there's so much talent, and there's no reason not to do that. So I would agree with you in principle on that. I just think it takes a little bit longer.
I would say that this year I think the offense will be more elite than the defense. I think Stetson Bennett takes a big leap this year. He's been in the system a long time, and we got a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, that you do, and ultimately, John David, that's the key. We saw that in the national championship game. When you don't have weapons, no matter how good you are, it's going to limit your production. Hey, thank you very much for the show, for the call. I shouldn't say the show's over here. We'll have a break here. Zim, you in?
Zim's here.
I see Zim.
He's alive.
Sometimes it's hard to see. It's dark over there. Zim will be here in a minute for those of you sticking around. We hope all of you will be.